This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
Hey, Bullseye listeners, it's Jesse. It's Max Fun Drive time. Bullseye is produced by Maximum Fun, a worker-owned cooperative here in Los Angeles. And Maximum Fun is supported by membership. So I hope that if you like Bullseye, you think it's worth paying for. And you can go to MaximumFun.org/join to become a member and do that. That's MaximumFun.org/join.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My first guest this week is Jenny Slate. You know, Jenny Slate, Mona Lisa Saperstein from Parks and Recreation.
Money, please.
Oh, no, there's no money.
Money, please. Money, please.
Ben, give her some money. It's easier.
Jenny Slate, indie film star from Landline, an obvious child.
Wow. You are a serious regular.
It's like the one place where I can go and wear my diaper and feel that I fit in.
Got it.
I also don't normally order for the person that I'm with at a restaurant, but the chicken piccata is the best that this place has to offer. It's a gem, it's a crown jewel. You gotta have it.
Jenny Slate, the woman behind the adorable stop-motion phenomenon, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On.
Guess what my bed is?
What?
A piece of bread. Guess one time I went to a hotel, and guess what the bed was made out of?
What?
A muffin.
And also, Jenny Slate, the stand-up comedian. She just released her second special. It's called Seasoned Professional. It's streaming now on Prime.
I was pregnant for a long time, and I understood that I was, but, like, even on the way to the hospital, when my body was, like, really hurting and stuff was starting to leak out, I was just like, kind of feels like someone's gonna sub in here, though. Like, it's just such an extreme experience that I just was like, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like something I would do, you know? Like, would I knock on someone's door after 4 dates at 2 a.m. and be like, I just need to tell you I'm in love with you? Like, yeah. Extreme stuff, I've done it. But, like, this, I was like, oh, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like what she would do. And, like, anytime something's been hard or I haven't wanted to do it, like, I've always just been able to quit or be fired.
Jenny Slate, welcome back to Bullseye. It's nice to see you.
Thank you for having me back.
Childbirth. You know, they call it the miracle of childbirth.
They do?
Yeah, that's what they call it. And it, having witnessed it 3 times as an adult,
mm-hmm.
once as a child as well.
Sure.
It still has an air of unreality to me.
Yeah.
That it's so awe-inspiring, not just in an overwhelmed sense.
Yeah.
But it's unbelievable.
Yes.
And I feel like that is a wonderful subject for stand-up comedy.
Yeah, yeah. After I gave birth, I got, like, really interested in, like, the surrealist art movement and in Leonora Carrington as, like, a writer and painter, because I was like, birth, like, the way that it looks is, like, like, you could just take a photo and it would be a surrealist image at certain points, you know, just like little person inside of a big person in a weird way with lots of, like, blood and energy. That seems very surreal to me.
How did giving birth compare to your expectation of giving birth?
To be honest, it was a lot more positive than I thought. It's so complicated to talk about the birth experience because there are so many ways that it can go, and people who have been through it in one way or another are deeply tied to the specificity of their experience and, like, sensitive. And then there's other people, of course, that, like, have children that arrive at, you know, and they didn't come out of one of the partner's bodies or whatever. And I, like, after going through it, I feel especially sensitive about it. So it's not, like, a brag, but it was really positive, which also doesn't mean that it didn't hurt and that there wasn't danger. It didn't go perfectly, but it, you know, we made it through. And everything that I said in the special is true. Like, I did not see myself as the type of person that would do an extreme thing like give birth. And so I didn't identify with that skill set. And then I was really surprised that the skill set that I already have as, like, a caretaker or a person who you need to have, there's skill involved in receiving care. And, like, you know, as someone who has to be courageous, what I am like in crisis, how deeply do I identify with my own, like, bodily processes or whatever? Like, it was just me. You know, like, I guess I just, like, thought you definitely have to become a different version of yourself to do that, but you go in as you. And so it was good for me, and I felt really cared for, and I felt it was sort of like romantic between me and my husband in a weird way. We're not into, like, intense stuff. it's not like a fetish, you know.
Thanks for selling that last thing. I'm sure a lot of NPR listeners were like, I can guess, like, what she's talking about.
Yeah.
You say you didn't identify yourself as somebody who could do something extreme or would do something extreme like giving birth.
Yeah.
Did you think of yourself as somebody who would do something like become a parent?
No, I didn't. I didn't think that I was going to have children. I hadn't ever met, like, a partner that I wanted to do that with. And I was genuinely just, like, really freaked out about what I took to be, like, the loss of freedom or my own time. And then when I met my husband and he was talking about how he wanted to become a parent and what he meant by that, I just was at this place in my life where I was like, I don't know. I'm kind of tired of, like, all this me. Like, I'm tired of, like, taking care of myself in this way that I'm kind of going to the same moves over and over again. And not that they're worn out, but I'm ready for a different type of an experiment in love and loving. And I think also just because my husband is who he is, I just thought, I'm going to go for it. And it didn't feel like, whoa, wild, like, this is crazy, you know, very outrageous and ill-advised. It was just kind of like, it felt almost sad to me that I had never even given myself a chance to consider being a mother. And then I realized, like, oh, I guess I have been wanting to try to do that. And because I had no expectations, it allowed me to, like, do it in whatever way I thought, which is a way that I've actually done a lot of things in my career, too. So it felt like a good fit. Like, being a stand-up comedian, like, I didn't grow up watching stand-up. I just, like, did it however I thought.
Did you previously identify, like, as a young adult, as somebody that was brave in the sense of participating in recklessness or foolishness?
I mean, I think I can be, like, a silly fool, you know, like someone whose dress is tucked into her tights by mistake, or toilet paper on the foot, or, you know, farting, eating something I'm allergic to because I think it's not going to be that big of a deal. Like,
you're saying, like, you're capable of being the first act of romantic comedy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, that is what I'm like. And
things that make Sandra Bullock relatable.
Totally. I'm that. Yeah. I wish. I don't try to be reckless or foolish. And in fact, I, like, think of myself as, like, a good student who likes to follow the rules, even though, you know, I definitely, like, smoked a ton of weed in college and after for a long time. But, like, I think of myself as, like, a good girl, you know, and that, like, the way, like, a good, like, nice lady. But, like, the way that I participate in revelry is, it's just never bad. Like, I never, like, break a window, fall down the stairs, or take my shirt off by mistake, something like that. But I do think of myself as an extreme person, and I've been embarrassed by that and caught sort of on my back foot by that instinct to just sort of blast out or make really big commitments and be kind of, like, wild and dedicated to the pursuit of romance, things like that, you know, like, and be on stage and just improvise, like, I like to feel in the moment connection.
We're going to take a quick break. When we return, more with Jenny Slate. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR. This message comes from Apple Card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase. That's 3% on products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card, issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Carvana. Selling your car? Visit Carvana and enter your license plate or VIN. Answer a few quick questions and you can get a real offer in seconds. When you finalize your offer, Carvana will pick it up so you never have to leave the comfort of home. Visit Carvana.com or download the app.
Summer is for going to the movie theater because it's too hot to stay home. It's for driving with the windows down, listening to your favorite music. It's for stretching out while you're on vacation to gobble up a TV show. For a guide to some of the TV, movies, and music we are most excited about this summer, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
When the economic news gets to be a bit much,
listen to The Indicator from Planet Money. We're here for you, like your friends, trying to figure out all the most confusing parts. One story, one idea, every day, all in 10 minutes or less.
The Indicator from Planet Money, your friendly economic sidekick.
From NPR.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Jenny Slate. She's an actor who's starred in movies including Marcel, The Shell with Shoes On, and Obvious Child. She's also a stand-up comic. She just released her second special. It's called Jenny Slate, Seasoned Professional, and it's streaming now on Prime. At what point did you feel like you were your adult self? At what point in your life?
Just recently. I think like around this summer. I mean, that's a surprising answer, surprising specificity, and also I'm about to be 42, so maybe a bummer, but I've never really felt like I'm the age that I am. And then this summer, there was this moment where my husband was away doing, like, research on a new writing project, and he was away for 10 days, and I went to visit my parents with my daughter so that I could have, like, some help with childcare. But I didn't have any plan for myself. Like, I had a book to basically, like, write and finish. And that, you know, had been on my mind for quite a while. But I wasn't like, you know, I'm going to try to get some work done. I was like, I'm not going to do anything except for, you know, be with Ida and care for her. And that's what this is. This 10 days is that. I'm actually just not going to try to do anything because it's just not going to work for me. And there was something in this time where I was like, maybe being around my own mother, where I was like, oh, I'm an adult. I really feel it. It was like a really peaceful feeling, a singular feeling. I don't know what it was. Would love to check it out astrologically speaking, but I will always remember that time at the end of this past June in 2023. I was also on strike, so like I couldn't do anything anyway. And I just was like, I'm here now. Like, I'm really capable of being kind of like the farmer on this land.
I want to play a clip from Marcel the Shell.
Mm-hmm.
Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, specifically. This is a character that you created quite a long time ago and became, I think, first a sort of viral internet video, mm-hmm. and then a children's book, and more recently a feature film, which I really loved.
Thanks.
He is a shell.
Yeah.
Like a little seashell with a googly eye, mm-hmm. and little shoes. And in the movie, a documentary filmmaker who is your ex-husband and partner in making Marcel the Shell, mm-hmm. in real life, who plays himself in the movie, is interviewing him. And in this scene, Marcel made a live stream asking for help finding his family. It gets a lot of views, but he doesn't. It's not helping so far. And in this scene, he's reading the comments.
So cute. Peace. Yeah, obviously peace. Like, what a weird thing to try to test to see if someone else is into. Like, of course I'm into peace. No, sorry, I'm a real war person. No, war, actually. I sign all my personal letters war. Let the battle begin, Marcel.
I was thinking about what I like about Marcel the Shell. I think it's maybe something about his combination of sort of meekness slash fear and self-possession.
Yeah.
So where... How did you find that?
Brief look within.
Yeah. Which half of it were you faking or not?
It's sort of hard at this point to talk about Marcel because I don't know how to describe it, but I'm just doing my work and that's what comes out. I don't like plan anything. And then the character, his profile sort of builds, you know, his personality builds, just the way that when you meet someone, you know more about them because of how they behave. And I know that it's also coming from me. Marcel and I don't have the same personality exactly, really, because I am more worried about the consequences of my outbursts. Marcel, like, he's not afraid to kind of do whatever it is that he wants to do in that moment. So he's kind of like, he's a little pissy in that moment. And that moment also was lifted from a car ride that Dean Fleischerkamp, the director and co-creator of Marcel, he and I were recording in the car, and we saw like a peace sticker on a car. And I would be in character for the whole time, and I just kind of went on like a weird rant about like, oh, you're the one, you know, like you love peace. Oh God, I'm so glad we finally found one person, you know. And like, like, I think that's me. That's it. That is my own opinion. You know, like, it's also just my own irritation with uptight hippies. That's like, oh, you're the first person that thought of this. Like, you really? And I don't know why, but I find it so condescending. And anyway, Dean loved it and lifted it in and put it in that moment, which I think really works. But I think like Marcel, he's not embarrassed about being pissy in the way that I'm like a female person living in patriarchy. If I'm pissing, everyone's pissy. Everyone's furious at me. You know, like they're just like, ugh, you know, so like it's harder to be in a bad mood. I mean, I'm allowed to, I know, but it doesn't mean that, especially if you're like me and you're a child of the 80s, like that also means there's a lot of like the 50s that existed there. Like my parents are from the 50s and we can all work on like divesting ourselves of like the misogyny placed on us. But it's a long thing. And the fears that I have really revolve around being perceived by a certain like sort of big giant misogynist eye. And I don't know. So it's like nice to be Marcel. Also, he's a boy, which is also weird. But he is, I guess.
Marcel the Shell is also like, it's about like sadness and loneliness and longing.
Yeah.
In a way that is surprising and lovely for such a silly children's film.
You could say the same of my comedy, my specials. I mean, yeah, I guess Marcel's for, it's like a family movie, but I think we're all working with like a signature mixture. If you're able to isolate what it is for you, and you're a creative person, or maybe just for anyone, it can just be really helpful to kind of understand, you know, what are the main components of like your experience? What are like the big notes? And my dad says that my comedy is about being happy. And I think that's right. But I think that it's really hard to talk about what you're happy about if you also haven't encountered what has made you feel heartbroken or disappointed or frightened. At least that's how it is for me. There isn't like a lot of separation there. And I like that because I also see that in the world that things are entwined and that there is entanglement and that it's supposed to be that way. And I find in myself that the parts that cry out, act out, whatever, are always the ones that are being like sort of inside of myself, like in my interiority, those things that I'm like shunning.
Hey, Bullseye listeners, it's Jesse, and I'm here with Maximum Fun's production fellow, Daniel Huesias. Hey, bud, how's it going?
Hey, Jesse, how are you doing?
I feel like people probably are guessing what a production fellow is.
I think that they may think I'm just a production gentleman, I'm assuming.
Sure.
I drink tea and
you're a production feller.
Yeah. Yeah.
We used to have an internship program at Maximum Fun many, 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 many years ago when it was like me in my apartment. A few people like wrote to me and said, can I come sit at the kitchen table with you? And I wanted to create a paid program that would give people who were in the position that I was in when I graduated from school a sort of ingress into this industry. Because, like, there's no majoring in production, in podcast production. Maybe actually there is now at a couple of colleges, but in general, no majoring in podcast production. And also, like, I don't know, I'll tell you, my experience when I graduated from college was I applied for 10,000 jobs, including driving a number of prize vans, and got this many interviews. And I'm holding up a big fat zero. And I don't know if it's because I went to, I went to UC Santa Cruz. I didn't go to Emerson or Brown or whatever. But what do you do as a production fellow?
Well, you and I have that in common. I've submitted dozens upon dozens of applications and headshots and got nowhere. And then the production fellowship came across my computer screen. And I think I want to talk about the YouTube video that you produced. When you became a worker-owned cooperative last summer on my birthday, June 30th.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
I remember seeing the video and how every single person here at Maximum Fun expressed how important it was for them to become a worker-owned cooperative. And I remember at the end of the video, I left with the sentiment, left with the feeling that y'all were good people who made great work and cared about the work that they were doing. So I applied. And luckily, you gave me my first interview after dozens upon dozens of applications. And then I think what I was expecting coming into the production fellowship was just really everything that I dreamed of when it came to getting my dainty little foot into the door of podcast production. I've written scripts. I've pulled clips for y'all. I have walked down the stairs to greet John Malkovich, which was wonderful.
But yeah, I mean, I think because for years I made this show almost by myself. Mm-hmm. And then I made this show with our original producers, Nick and Julia, again, like by ourselves.
Yeah.
I always imagine this production fellowship to be a just go do it situation, because we're, you know, even with the staff that we are able to have on Bullseye, we still probably have the smallest staff of any national public radio program, lowercase letters. Mm-hmm. And so we all just have to go do it. And that actually is a part of why I wanted to make sure this was a full-time paid job with benefits, because we're asking people to do real stuff, and that you're getting support from Kevin and Richard and Jesus. We are asking you to just go take care of business.
Yeah. I mean, y'all keep me fed. Every time I order Thai food, I think of you.
Thank you, Danielle.
But
also
fed an experience. Like, I've learned so much just in a short amount of time being here. And that really is, it's been a dream.
Thank you. I'm really glad. And that money largely is coming from members of Maximum Fun. Folks who go and sign up at $5 a month and say, I listen to this show. And that money goes directly to the shows that they listen to, too. Yeah. Like, if people listen to this show and My Brother, and Me, or Black People Love Paramore, or any of the other Maximum Fun shows, when you go and sign up, it asks you what shows you listen to, and that money goes to those shows. There are now something like two dozen Max Fun employees. And Max Fun is a worker-owned cooperative, as you alluded to. Mm-hmm. Because Maximum Fun is a worker-owned cooperative, it means that the success of Bullseye is success for all of the folks who work here. Yeah. And because there are members who support Bullseye, it means that we can do things like have this production fellowship, have Richard and Kevin and Jesus, have Mara, our talent booker, who has completely upped our game. Because we're the little guy, we have to fight, we have to scrap extra hard. Like, this isn't coming from the mothership in Washington, D.C. This is coming from our little studios in Los Angeles. We're really proud of that. And it's your support that allows us to do that. Folks who go to MaximumFun.org/join. I want to emphasize, though, going to MaximumFun.org/join is all about supporting what you consume and what you love in a direct way. It is also an opportunity to get stuff.
Yes.
I cannot undersell the getting stuff part of this. Let's talk about the getting stuff.
There is stuff. I know that at $10 a month, you can take home a beautiful pin that you could throw on any lapel. It's our Speaking Into Microphones pin. Very nice. Enamel, which is nice.
You can only get it by becoming a member of Maximum Fun.
Yes.
At every monthly level, starting at $5 a month, you get access to years and years and years of bonus content, including our extended interview with Boots Riley, our new special show, which you probably heard in the Bullseye feed this week, which is called Hey, What's Your Job? This is a show where we reached out to listeners and said, who's got an interesting job? We found a guy who lives deep under the earth, works deep under the earth, investigating dark matter.
Lives, breathes, works.
Yeah, exactly. We found a woman who makes vestments for Buddhist monks. We found a guy who puts labels on records. Mm-hmm. Like he's a printer whose job is printing records. Not the record, but the stuff on the record. A whole like panoply of people with amazing jobs. Yeah. You can only get that. There's a big exhaustive interview about Bullseye and the history of Bullseye that our pal Linda Holmes from Pop Culture Happy Hour yes. did with me.
Love Linda.
Who doesn't? Linda Holmes is the absolute greatest. All kinds of stuff. And look, if you have the means to support the production of this show at a higher level, $20 a month, $35 a month, $50, $100 a month, there are lots of great thank you gifts at those levels, too. And we're grateful for any level at which you can support us. I mean, this is the honest truth. Mm-hmm. Given the number of people that listen to Bullseye, which I will admit, less than some other public radio shows, but not insignificant. If we want to pay for the production of this show, it's not really about how many people give us $20 a month instead of $10 a month. What it's about is people who listen to this show and appreciate it thinking, yeah, I could pay for that. I should pay for that. Like, I like that. I should pay for it. Folks who give us $5 a month who just sign up to say, you know, this show's worth 50 cents an episode to me. And go to MaximumFun.org/join. Yeah. That is the thing. That is like the magic lightning bolt. Daniel, thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time. And thanks so much to everybody who's listened to this. If you're out there and you like the work that we do, we can really only do it with your support. So go to MaximumFun.org/join and become a member. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you. I'm Jesse Thorne. You're listening to Bullseye. My guest is actor and stand-up comic Jenny Slate. What was the experience like for you of working on this character and film, Marcel the Shell, on both sides of being divorced from your collaborator in the character and film?
For me, I felt that it was... It was like the what, like imagine like a town that had a fire and like everything's kind of burned down, but then there's like weirdly one house that didn't get touched and that becomes the new center and the new home. That's what it felt like to me, because like it's one thing like a romantic partnership doesn't work out. That's something that we hear about all the time. And we kind of know what the lyrics of that song are, kind of, so to speak. But if you lose a creative partner, or you lose faith in a creative, someone you look up to creatively, or all of that, that is a very terrible loss. And I was lucky that I didn't have to feel that way. And when I would be Marcel and Dean would be interviewing me, and we had a plan, of course, you know, for the day and what we're doing. And there, you know, we recorded in a house, but, you know, we had like other people around us. And it was a very, very non-repressed, I guess. Like, I don't know how to say it. Like, it wasn't like we were repressing ourselves and just like, everyone be on good behavior, you know, even though we're getting divorced. Like, it was actually just real. It was like, this is actually just still totally here. And I don't really, like, want to live in a reality where I can't, like, celebrate Dean or talk about how brilliant he is, because, like, he is. And he also is the person who opened me up to so much of myself as a performer and also to, like, kind of to film in general, because he just was, like, such a cinephile, like a typical one, you know, when I met him and we were really young. And so actually, I think it was, like, a very, very stable zone. But for me, outside of that stable zone, it was like, ah! You know, but like so much change in myself. And, you know, as my beloved therapist Pamela will say, like, sometimes you just have one doorway. You got to go through that weird dark doorway. But the recording, I just remember really positive.
I'm terrified of divorce.
Yeah, it sucks.
My parents hated each other.
Uh-huh.
My father's gone now, but mm-hmm. my parents truly hated each other in a way that I have never had the experience of I think, hating anyone in my life.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've got just out of luck.
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, when a friend of mine is getting divorced or someone in my life, it's almost impossible for me not to process it as, this is the end of the world.
Well, it can feel that way. And I think I've said this before, but like, it's just the end of a lot. It's the end of a certain relationship culture. It's the end of a belief system that the two of you had together. it's the end of your physical home often, the end of schedules that you relied upon. It's the end of external reliance and of a certain identity, and it's really, really, really deeply disorienting and unsettling, and there's not an answer. And I think Dean and I are really lucky that we're just who we are, and that we didn't try to, like, annihilate each other, even though our relationship ended. I mean, we also didn't have any children. And both of us want to be working actors, directors. Like, we want to be the artists that we are, that we each are. And I just think we actually are not reckless. There's absolutely no way that we would have blocked each other from this experience. And so that meant that we had to support each other. And it wasn't like, I guess I'm going to have to be with her in the boat. You know, like, it wasn't like, it was like, I have to be with him. Like, cause this is the only lifeboat we have. It was like, there's this weird chance at sweetness and goodness and growth. And like, don't think too much about it. Just like, let's go.
So much more still to come with Jenny Slate after the break. An NPR exclusive. Jenny Slate, grown adult, does not have her own cell phone plan. From whom is she mooching? The answer is right around the corner. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Moms know the ups and downs of life. It's what makes them great subjects for books.
This is one of the things that fiction can do, right? It can give us a window into the battles that each person is waging or facing, but it doesn't mean that we condone her actions.
This week on NPR's Book of the Day podcast, we are discussing books centering mothers. So call your mom, then tune into the Book of the Day podcast from NPR.
From your car radio to your smart speaker, NPR meets you where you are in a lot of different ways. Now we're in your pocket. Download the NPR app today.
This is Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is actor and comedian Jenny Slate. I want to play another clip from your special Seasoned Professional. It's about you receiving a casting notice to play Pennywise in It.
I open my email. It's like, an appointment has been made on your behalf to audition for the role of Pennywise. I was like, I truly was like, wait, what? Like, no, like, that couldn't be, like, the, like the murdering, kidnapping, balding male clown, right? Like, and then I'm like such an optimist that I was like, well, maybe it's like something else. Like, maybe this is actually like best case scenario, like a very anti-Semitic rom-com about like a whimsical woman who like can't get it together named like Pennywise and like...
Well, it's just why I throw in a fart noise there.
You make a lot of noises on stage.
I do. I do. In life, too. Yeah, for sure.
Somebody on Twitter said I should ask you how you do so much squeak-related comedy.
How do I not, honestly? I don't even know that I'm doing it on purpose now. I just love... I love, like, noises of tension. I love noises of embarrassment. I love noises of, like, pressure. You know, I just, like, I love that.
I want the Pennywise people to know that I'm available to do Pennywise, but offer only. I'm not going to audition.
Yeah.
I think what you're what you're describing there is the feeling of agency that you lose as an actor. It is so weird to have your art in part controlled by not just others, but also like other people's idea of you.
Yeah. And what you hope for is that the people that you work with, whether they're like the director on your set or like the script supervisor, for example, the script supervisor on any job that I'm on, I always just like feel so bad for them because like I'm not great with continuity and like they have to come in and be like, Jenny, so you were like actually holding your purse in your left hand for like all of those scenes and like you have to keep holding it there. You know, it's like they have to be like my mommy, babysitter, daddy. It's annoying. But you hope that like anyone will kind of just like understand what you are, where you're at, how it works for you. And like the agent actor relationship is confusing, can be confusing if it's not working in the best way, because the agent can feel like an oracle, like your mommy and like the gatekeeper. I don't think they want to feel that way. I think they just want to be your agent and find you work and help you make money and help your career, you know, continue. But man, it can be so humiliating and not even, I don't think it's like people looking to humiliate you. I think like that kind of humiliation that happens when someone is just too general or careless in that way is, it's bad, you know, it feels really bad. But I also learned something like I have not even thought about this joke, honestly, the joke about getting the casting appointment to audition for Pennywise. Like I did the joke. I just think it's funny because it's so silly. You know, like I'm a petite, very femme woman and I've never done scary stuff. It's just such a big leap and it's tough. It's like it's just a tough one. But I also just think it's so silly and funny and blah, 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 blah. And then I've been doing some interviews about this special and everyone asks about it. And I'm like, oh, I guess it is fascinating. Like, for me, it's just so outrageous that it's almost like seeing a star in the sky and you're just like, whoa, and then it's gone. And then you tell a few people, I saw a shooting star last night or something. But in fact, people are fixated on it in this weird way. And I've been thinking about, like, what it means to me. And I was like, let me look at what that was. Because, again, everything happened to me. Like, everything in the special happened to me in my life. And sometimes you see like where my imagination went because of something real, but nothing is like a lie, you know? And I went back in my emails and I was just saying this to someone else yesterday. Like I wanted to see what my reaction was because I know how I feel now years and years and years later. But that like what I noticed to my dismay was that you could not detect a whiff of discomfort on my part, certainly not despair. And like I also like a lot of time has gone by. I don't even have those same representatives anymore. And not like because of that, you know, like there are a lot of great things that those people did, too. But I was like, oh, it's weird that they sent me this. But I'm still here and I'm still me. And what I need to work on is that it's weird that I didn't say anything. And I'm not sure that there was a way for me to do that. But I'm still an actor. I still have agents who I really love and encourage me in the right way and treat me very specifically. But like, I'm like, oh, what it is for me now And one thing that I think is a sign of me being whatever my version of an adult person is that when something makes me uncomfortable and feels wrong for, like, very clear reasons, it's something that I'm going to – I need to say it. Because looking back in those emails, I was kind of like, first I'm like, wait, this clown is a girl now? That's kind of, like, all I write. They're like, yeah, they're open to many ideas. And then I'm like, all right, let me take a look. Like, can I go Friday? But I hadn't read it yet, you know? And, like, I know privately that I'm spinning out. And I'm like, there's nothing out there for me. Like, I've done all this work and nobody sees any of it. Nobody knows what to do with me as an actor. I don't look right. I don't have this. I'm not that. They're not ever going to be able to see me outside the confines of, you know, this hyper comedic role. It's just not going to happen. I'm not special enough. They're not going to care about me, whatever. And then the next email I send is like after the weekend, and I'm like, hey guys, like I'm just eating, you know? And I'm like, no, I can't do this. Like, I really want to be in a scary movie, but, like, I don't think I can play this clown. And, like, I'm not going to go on the audition. Like, XOXO, thank you. And it's just like, no, Jenny, not XOXO, thank you. Like, there could have been a respectful response. And I don't know. Hopefully I won't have to do that again.
It seems to me like a very different thing to be a person who made a movie. Like soup to nuts with a partner, but like really made a movie soup to nuts, is doing stand up,
mm-hmm.
has a child,
yeah,
and mostly lives in Massachusetts. Like, that's a lot of autonomies, you know what I mean?
Yes, it is. I don't know what else to say. It seems like what I'm like, like, I'm not weirded out by it. It's actually a relief to be like, oh, I guess I just like do many things, but my identity is constant.
And those things are things that are your things. They're not things that require, you know, nobody has to, I mean, people have to give you permission to get stand-up gigs.
They do.
But.
And they have to give you money to make a movie.
But they're things that you are doing.
Yeah. And, you know, I think like one of the most real joys of my current life as a creative person is that I've really started to lock into like what is, I don't know how else to say it, like what my thing is. And also like writing books is a way that's become like clearer and clearer. And it's not so that I'm like, finally, I can create like my one single thing, but it's that I've started to learn like the language of my own creative satisfaction. And like one thing that I noticed this summer when I was writing a new book, I was like, oh, all of these things that are pieces that don't work for this, I can put them in a little folder. And what I am interested in now is seeing, and I don't know, but like seeing if I want to write some very, very short fiction. Like I really love the work of Tove Jansson, who's like, her most famous book is the Summer Book, but she wrote a lot of short stories. And I mentioned at the start, you know, like I love the work of Leonora Carrington. And I was like, I wonder where I fall. Those are my like little gods that I look to. And I have a palette now, and I'll always need to ask someone to give me money to make the thing. That is one of the weirdest things. Is that money equals like permission to completely actualize it. But there is a lot of the work that you can do before someone finally gives you that cash flow. And I enjoy like on a daily basis just dipping into like different ideas that are in process. And I am usually working on like a bunch of things at once. And I've never just worked on one thing ever. I don't even know if that feels good. Like sometimes it's really stressful, but usually there's like one main thing with like three others on the side.
I thank you so much for your time and congratulate you on 6 months of being an adult.
Thank you. It's going well. My Subaru lease is up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you have a big decision ahead of you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, going to get another one. I don't know. It depends on if they make it like fully electric. We'll see. I have a real ID.
Oh, so you can fly anywhere.
Yeah, that's cool. I've been to the DMV. But you know what is really bad about me in my first 6 months as an adult? And honestly, this is my dad's fault, which isn't an adult thing to say. But he, like, won't let me off this the family plan.
Wait, the cell phone family
plan?
Yeah,
and it's, like, not a good plan. And, like towards the end of every month, it's like, you've used up all your data. And I'm like, Dad! I was like, let me off. But then, like, I don't know. Then he always has a reason for why, like, I shouldn't. You know, one thing about being an adult, I mean, that I've learned in the first 6 months is that if your dad says you have to do it, like, you just have to do what your dad says.
Jenny Slate. Her new special is called Jenny Slate, Seasoned Professional. You can stream it now on Amazon Prime Video. Super funny. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. Although we have had the pleasure of being in the office a lot more lately, where I was just there yesterday, and the question was, could we get our colleague Danny into a particularly large promotional tote bag? The answer was yes. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. Our production fellow at Maximum Fun is Daniel Huesias. Our interstitial music is by DJW, also known as Dan Wally. Our theme song is Huddle Formation by The Go Team. Thanks to The Go Team. Thanks to their label, Memphis Industries. Bullseye is on Instagram at Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. You can also find us on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. And I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jenny Slate. I know I did. It's always great to see Jenny. And I also hope that if you love Bullseye, you'll go to MaximumFun.org/join and become a member. The Max Fun Drive is the only time we ask you to do this all year long. But it is actually how we make this show. It is the means by which we make this show. So MaximumFun.org/join. If you made it all the way through this episode, including me and Danielle plugging the Max Fun Drive in the middle of it, probably you really like it. So go to MaximumFun.org/join. $5 a month makes a huge, huge difference. Thanks.
On this week's Wild Card, we talk with Issa Rae about those moments where our lives could have gone another direction.
Definitely wasn't supposed to be with that guy at all. At all. But I still think about it.
I'm Rachel Martin. Issa Rae tells us how to make peace with the path not taken. That's on the Wild Card podcast from NPR, the game where cards control the conversation.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election. Guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.